You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Only four teams remain at the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City, and we're going to have number one seed Oklahoma taking on number five seed UCLA at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, today on ESPN and the app. If UCLA wins that game, they play an elimination game right after. If Oklahoma wins, they'll be in the championship series that starts on Wednesday. Hey, meanwhile, on planet Earth, in a world filled with dumb stuff, this could possibly be the dumbest. The annual cheese roll in England. The cheese goes down first, and then all these other people do. I mean, this is competitors from around the world coming in, hurling themselves down the hill for the glory of becoming, I guess, head cheese guy. What do you guys think of this?
Well, you know, you call it dumb. These people think it's very important. So now you're a cheese roller hater.
There you go. You're right.
All of England is.
Well, let me ask, is this conduct becoming the ninth best three-point shooter in NBA history?
Free throw shooter.
Free throw shooter. CJ, would you do this after your career?
I would never do this.
Yeah.
I don't like exercising for fun. So being honest, like, and that looks dangerous.
Wendy, we had to get Wendy in there, but Wendy, we'll get you back on that next time. Welcome back to Get Up. We're coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Got a lot of great stuff to get to this morning. CJ McCollum, JJ Redick here to talk game two of the NBA Finals. Wendy going to be along soon, so Cindy, let's roll it and get up this morning with Chef Curry cooking. The Warriors superstar needed only three quarters to dispatch the Celtics. So why is one of our experts still doubting their title chances? And the Celtics had no answers last night. What went wrong with their two superstars? And do they still have the edge in this series as it heads back to Boston? Plus, it's become the story of the offseason, Lamar's contract. Why do one of our insiders think it's becoming a Dak Prescott situation? We will explain that shortly. But first, let's get to the game of the night, Celtics-Warriors, game two. Take you to Jason Tatum walking in with a Jordan shirt, looking fly. Steph Curry saying, I got to stop him. Late first quarter, Tatum right over Steph with a three. 21 first half points. But in the final seconds of the quarter, it's Steph driving inside and scoring, making it happen. Golden State up one after one. Second quarter, Steph gets it right from Tatum. Going the other way, Curry's going to pull up and hit the three. He was on it last night, JJ.
Oh, he scored in a variety of ways. There in transition, killing it in the pick and roll, was even great in isolation, which isn't a surprise because he's been great in isolation all season.
And then look at that moment. Draymond Green, Jaylen Brown getting into it right there. Draymond had a tech earlier but didn't get a tech right there. Celtics up two heading into the break. And then up five in the third. This is where Curry really went to work. Right there on Al Horford, JJ.
Well, all of his threes, CJ said this in the first hour, all of his threes are momentum threes, especially at home. You saw the one there in isolation off the switch against Horford. Then he hits one against drop coverage. And then he gets a heat check against drop coverage. Daniel Tice all the way back, not even above the three-point line. Great screen there to get Curry open. And here Jordan Poole with the end of quarter heave.
Unbelievable.
This is like a little Curry magic in there.
Oh,
right?
Man. It's like that's a CJ McCollum shot right there. Nailing it from 39 out.
I don't have that type of range.
Warriors winning a blowout 107-88. And afterwards, Draymond Green talking about the power of Steph.
Our offense is always a lot of Steph. It all starts with Steph. Whether, you know, when KD was here, our offense still started with Steph. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be.
You like that? When KD was here, our offense still went around Steph. Always throwing it in. Steph Curry, the fifth player over the last 25 years to score twice as many points as the next closest teammate through the first two games of the NBA Finals. Look at the company he's in. LeBron James, AI, Shaq, and Tim Duncan. Just amazing what he's doing. Let's bring the guys back in. And bring in Brian Windhorst, who's with us now. And Brian, you were at the game. So what stood out to you?
Yeah, Ryan, I don't think maybe we pay enough attention to how really poor the performance was by both Steve Kerr and Draymond Green in Game 1. They were off their games, but they both completely brought it in Game 2. Kerr made three big game plan changes. One, he took Andre Iguodala out of the rotation, which had to hurt, but it was absolutely the correct thing to do, and put in Gary Payton the second. Two, he switched up his defensive strategy to start the game. He put Draymond on Jaylen Brown, and he put Klay Thompson on Al Horford, who really hurt them getting loose for three-pointers in Game 1. And then when he put Jordan Poole out there, he put him out there with better spacers on the court. It gave Jordan a better chance to be successful. All three of those things hit. Al Horford didn't even get a three-point shot off in this game, although there were a number of guys on him. And Draymond completely came out with a different mindset. He was lazy in his closeouts. He was not aggressive on defense in Game 1. He didn't respect the Celtics players. He made it very clear from the start he was going to set the tone for them defensively, and that was a big difference maker in the way Game 2 played out.
You know, he doesn't really show up in the stat sheet in the way you expect, JJ, 9.7 assists. But this guy, Draymond, I mean, he in many ways was the star of the game. And you saw the Warriors do, I think, what they do better than almost any team, which is make adjustments after a big loss.
Well, I think Draymond Green last night was the instigator for the Warriors. He mucked up the game time and time again. We saw it from the opening play. Off of the jump ball, Al Horford catches the ball at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. Draymond forces a jump ball. He made these type of plays over and over again. And we talked about this earlier. Draymond is in their head. Like, think about all the attention, all the talk in huddles, every dead ball, Draymond's yapping. It is a little bit of a distraction. It's not a distraction to Draymond. That's who he is. That's where he's comfortable. And I thought last night he just starred in that role.
Yeah, CJ, how much of a distraction can that be on the court?
I think it can certainly be a distraction if you're not accustomed to it, you're not used to it, and especially when the team is kicking your butt, like the way the Warriors have kind of controlled the game. You know, right. Quarters 1-3, they've controlled the game in both series. Obviously, last night they closed them out in the fourth. But outside of that fourth quarter in Game 1, the Warriors have been the better team. They've looked more composed. They've looked more like a championship contender. But the Celtics stole that first game. And I think Draymond understood the severity of it. He also understands he's the only player in that team that really talks trash. Steph dances. Klay does the game 6 chance. Poole kind of talks a little bit after he scores. But Draymond is the constant force of communication. Good or bad?
Good or bad. I love how you add that in. So, Wendy, the other side of this is, and I think a lot of people are talking about it, we've talked about it, Klay Thompson did not have a good night. Not even close. What's the level of concern with Klay?
Yeah, I think it's mild to moderate. I mean, I if you watch the game in the second half, especially the third quarter where they got separation, the Warriors went away from the standard offense where they sort of move the ball, and they went to straight high pick and roll with Steph. They basically really tried to ride that hot hand. That is obviously a devastating attack, but it is easier to defend in the aggregate than the Warriors' great ball movement. And I think they did that because they were a little bit worried about what Klay was giving them. He was, I think, started the game 1 of 10. And then you saw Steve Kerr leave Klay in all the way till late in the game, trying to run stuff for him to get him into some sort of rhythm. That was an indication that they're a little bit worried about it. But I will just point out that in the closeout game against the Mavericks just, 10 days ago, he did have a 32-point game. It's not like he's in a bad slump. He will rebound. But I do think they're going to need Klay. They can't just ride Steph on straight pick and roll because the Celtics will be able to defend that more effectively.
Yeah, it's a great point. And CJ, I think what people think when they think of Klay was, for all those years before the injuries, he was just so consistent. He was just this guy that you always had to watch for. And now the performance just seems so up and down from game to game. What's your level of concern with him?
I'm not really concerned. I think you look at what he's gone through from a rehab standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, of having to watch the way he was hurt, almost coming back and getting injured again. It's normal. I've gone through injuries, and the biggest hurdle sometimes isn't only physical, but it's mental. Figuring out, how to get back to my spots again. How do I get the pop, the lift? There's not a lot of days in between games right now, and he's had to go through a long playoff series in which he's having to play defense. He's guarding a bigger defender. He's leaning on Horford. Horford's leaning on him all night, with the rotation right. Changes. And I think all that has taken a toll on him, but Klay has irrational confidence. Like, JJ has it, I have it. And I think the good thing about him is that 1-for-10 or 10-for-10, he shoots the next one. He shoots number 11 as if he just made 5 in a row. And I think that's why you've seen him score 32 points in the last series, and that's why you'll see him score 30 again in this series.
Wow. I like that, irrational confidence. I'm the only person on set who doesn't have irrational confidence, sadly. So look, JJ, with Klay playing like this, is there a level of concern for Steph? Because this offense has been a multi-headed monster for so many years, and now one of your greatest weapons is not all there.
Well, look, the Warriors are at their best when they're getting contributions from not just Klay, but all of their role players. And so Andrew Wiggins is going to have to play well. Jordan Poole is going to have to play well. But let's not act like Steph Curry isn't the center of their universe at all times. And people talk about Steph Curry in this system. Steph Curry is the system. Their entire offense is built around him. I actually love the adjustment they made last night. They had so much success in game one, playing high pick and rolls against drop coverage, and they just went to it again and again in that third quarter, and that's what really got their offense going.
Yeah, Wendy, I want to talk about this Steph thing a little bit more because, CJ, you mentioned this really great point that other than the fourth quarter in game one, the Warriors have really, I guess, been in the driver's seat, right, of this series. So, Wendy, does this mean that given the Warriors, given what they've been through, their history, how dominant they've been, are they now in a little bit of the driver's seat at this point?
I mean, I could spin that right around and say that the first half of the first two games, both teams have been up by 2 points. The first halves have been played even. In the fourth quarter, the Celtics had one great fourth quarter and one bad fourth quarter. I could spin it around and say that the rest of the game is even, except for the third quarter, which is where the Warriors have outscored the Celtics. And you better brace yourself if you're a Celtics fan when I'm about to give you this number. The Warriors have outscored the Celtics by 35 points in the two third quarters in this series. I would say that is where the game has changed. And, you know, I heard CJ talking about this earlier. I obviously have talked to the Celtics players about this. I say, why? You don't think Ime Udoka brought it up at halftime, but let's prepare ourselves for this third quarter onslaught? You don't think CJ's coaches over the years when he was with the Blazers and they kept playing him didn't bring it up? They brought it up, but the Warriors have this thing that they just are able to do. And, you know, bottom line, the Celtics have some issues, turnover issues, getting continuity from some of their stars. But if they don't fix the third quarter, they ain't going to win. And so that's got to be a big factor. I think the rest of the series, frankly, has been played even except for that period.
Yeah, that graphic is so powerful. But I want us to put that third quarter graphic back up so people can really let it marinate. JJ, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think one of the reasons that the Warriors are always so good in the third quarter is because Steph gets on his phone at halftime and reads the Twitter comments. And he looks for motivation that way. It's true. I'm dead serious.
I'm not going to lie. I've checked my phone at halftime since I was in high school. My brother texts me.
Are you serious?
My brother texts me feedback. I get pick and roll coverages, clips. I don't go on Twitter, but I have heard Steph has gone on Twitter a few times. And I think I've said it before. He hasn't won a finals MVP yet. Mm-hmm. He's heard people talk about it. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he wants to admit it, he's showing why he's going to deserve a finals MVP.
So he wants it. Dwayne, do you change your game up after reading those texts and seeing that stuff at halftime?
I make adjustments to how I'm playing based on coverages, based on the generally teams send me right, obviously. So figuring out how to get back to my left hand. It's the little things that you may not see that someone else is seeing for you.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, folks. So if you want CJ to get going after halftime, his number is 86. No, I'm joking.
330 area code.
Okay, you figure the rest out.
Same. All right. Same. Atta boy. 330.
All right, guys. We're going to come back in a little bit.
Me, CJ, and LeBron.
First, we got to get this. Oh, there you go. Oh, we're figuring it out. All right. So I got to get to this, though. Comeback of the night from hockey, Rangers, Lightning, Steve Stamkos, and the Lightning hoping to get a win. They're down 2-0 on the series going into this one. And watch Chris Kreider right there for the Rangers, burying the rebound. Caught the defense napping and nails this one through the net. Rangers up 2-0. Early third, Lightning down 2-1. Got to get back in it. Power play, Corey Perry with the pass to Stamkos, who nets it in. He blasts the goal. What a great shot by Stamkos. They're now tied 2-2. And with less than a minute left in regulation, game on the line. Take a listen to Dave Mishkin on Lightning Radio.
Left point, Hedman. Across ice feed. Palat! Score! Palat!
Wow.
Andre Palat! On the touch pass from Kucherov!
That's how you feel when your series is saved. Lightning win it 3-2. Rangers have the series lead 2-1. We're going to have game 4 of the Eastern Conference Final for you tomorrow night. Rangers up again 2-1. Our coverage from Amalie Arena begins 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, right here on ESPN and ESPN+.
Well, coming up, it's become the story of the offseason. Lamar's contract. Why does one of our insiders think this is becoming a Dak Prescott situation? We're going to explain what that means. Plus, the Celtics, they had no answers last night. What went wrong with their two superstars, and do they still have the edge in this series as we now go to Boston? We'll talk about that and more on Get Up.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Monday Dan just fuels the fire. Dude.
You want a piece of meat?
What's up, America?
Dan Orlovsky likes to say words.
Holy fudge.
What in the flying fudge is going on?
What the heck are you talking about, dude?
I like Monday Dan, but now we got Stan Dan.
Stop doing that.
Dan is excited.
Here's the victory lap for America.
This is the last Monday I'm doing with you guys.
What is going on?
Yeah, he comes in hot every Monday. You knew this was coming, America. He's got his own segment, Monday Dan. Starting today, Dan Orlovsky, what's up? Dan, give us a hot take, starting with Joe Burrow.
I'm going to say that Joe Burrow is my leading candidate for MVP. If you look back at last season, and we just judged quarterbacks on how they performed when they didn't have to deal with sacks, he was as good as any quarterback in the league. That's including Aaron Rodgers, who did win MVP. Now they've upgraded 4 starters on their offensive line. They've got the best skill position group in all of football, and he's fully healthy this offseason, dealing with it halfway through the year coming off of the ACL. I think Joe Burrow wins MVP this season. The next guy, Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins is the most underappreciated quarterback in all of football. Ryan, in the 4 years that he's been in Minnesota, he's thrown for 127 touchdowns and 36 interceptions. Over 15,000 yards. Every season he's had a passer rating over 100. He's got 70 touchdowns in the last 2 years passing. He's a big-time player at that position, and I think that team is going to be better than people expect. The last piece will be Lamar Jackson. I have 2 issues with everybody, or mostly everybody in Lamar Jackson. Number one, the question, can he win with his style of play? Duh. And how much money should they give him? As much as he is asking for. He is one of the most electric and indefensible players in all of the league. I understand his style is a little bit non-traditional, but the proof is in the pudding. And he is as good a football player as we have in the NFL. Whatever he's asking for from the Ravens, they will and should pay him.
Wow, as much as he is asking for. So does that mean if he has to be the top paid quarterback in the NFL, they should pay him, Dan?
Absolutely. Ryan, the answer is absolutely because of this. When you choose to pay a quarterback that much money, that elite, we win because of you money, you have to ask yourself, has he proven that we can win when our roster might be somewhat depleted because of that financial allocation? Well, we saw that last year through 12 weeks of the season when Lamar Jackson was the MVP of the NFL and the Baltimore Ravens were the number one seed in the AFC with a team that was dealing with historic injury issues. So to have the Baltimore Ravens sit there and go, well, can he do it? He's already done it. And he's got an MVP to his case. I don't think it's even in question right now.
Wow. And your brother from another mother over here, Dan Graziano, is kind of like...
Drives me nuts.
A little skeptical. A little skeptical. No, what do you think? What's the latest on Lamar on the Ravens?
Yeah, look, they've been sort of stuck in this holding pattern since last offseason when the team thought they could get the deal done and they couldn't. I mean, to this point, Lamar is asking for something that they haven't been willing to offer. I don't think that it's a matter of money. I think it's more about structure of the contract. If you remember back when we used to talk about Dak Prescott a lot, okay. It was the Cowboys wanted the longer-term deal to help with the signing bonus proration, and he wanted the shorter-term deal so he could cash in again. So it's something along those lines. But it doesn't seem like Lamar's overly motivated to get this done now. Seems like he's willing to bet on himself and play it out and see where the quarterback market goes. But you're absolutely right. Look, if Josh Allen's got $43 million a year and Deshaun Watson's got $46 million a year, you know, and you want to pay me less than that, I'm Lamar Jackson, I'm going to put my MVP trophy on the table and say, right. Show me Josh Allen's and Deshaun Watson's MVP trophies, and I'll accept what you gave them. Otherwise, I want more.
Wow. Teddy, a guy who does have an MVP trophy is Aaron Rodgers, and he's at the top of the quarterback list right there, $50 million a year. So do you pay Lamar Jackson that money?
Well, Lamar can also say, and by the way, I just turned 25 years old. So a lot of organizations throw that number at you like, oh, no, you're 29, you're 30. At the end of the contract, you'll be 34. No, I just turned 25. I'm about to play my 25-year-old season. So that's a huge leverage chip that he has. Now, I think the Ravens also have to know this. I mean, I think for the Ravens to win championships, Lamar Jackson does need other complementary pieces, the run game. He does need the defense. He can win, Dan, with subpar talent around him, but consistently to win a championship without them, I don't think that can be done. He's proven he can win with them, but to go all the way and win a championship without those other pieces that need to be paid also, I think that's where it'll be difficult for him.
Teddy, I would agree with that. I think the reality, though, is this. Number one, if you don't have a player at that in the AFC, in that division and that conference that is somewhat indefensible, you don't stand a chance with all the other young stars at that position. That's why Lamar is, he was kind of one of the new ones, one of the first ones that became that situation. Second of all, I believe that every quarterback needs defense and a run game and a good offensive line and requisite skill position to go win a championship. I think we saw that with Matthew Stafford last year with the Los Angeles Rams. The third thing I would say is this. If you were going to tell me that a quarterback within his 4 years in the league had a 4-1, I am touchdown to turnover ratio, and then I want to be the highest paid guy, it would be a no-brainer. I'm telling you, so many people are stuck on what it looks like for Lamar Jackson because we've really never seen it, maybe outside of Michael Vick, maybe, you know, certainly in the modern era, so to speak. And it's always the question of how sustainable is it and can it win in the playoffs? The injuries have never been a running part. That's something I've learned. He got hurt last year playing quarterback in the pocket. Mm. Can you win in the playoffs? In 2018, he was great in the second half against the Chargers. In 2019, they go and beat the Tennessee Titans. They lose to the Titans because they have six drops, six of them, and they went down 14-0 5 minutes into the game. And then in 2020, they beat the Titans. He has over 300 yards of offense. And then they lose to the Buffalo Bills when he plays average football. But the guy that he played against, Josh Allen, who is arguably the best quarterback in football, played a relatively similar game, but we're just not crushing them because they won, but they scored 17 points. Mm-hmm. Yes, they'll win in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson will win in the playoffs. He's only started for 3.5 years.
Wow. I mean, a lot of those guys in the top five are guys with Super Bowl titles. We will see if Lamar can add his name to that list, but either way, we're all saying he might get the top payday in the league. Now, coming up, Draymond was all smoke last night. But should he have been ejected for his actions? And are the Celtics in big trouble if he keeps his antics up?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HE travel at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use the code 5HE travel to save 20%.
Back with you on Get Up with the Game of the Night. Celtics, Warriors, Game 2, NBA Finals. Steph getting ready, and he was on one in the third. Warriors up 5. Steph working on Al Horford. Steps back, drills it. Warriors up 8 at that point. Under 3 minutes to play in the quarter. Now up 11. Off the screen, Curry for 3. Good. 14-point game. They started pulling away. Next possession, Curry, you know when he hits it from downtown like that, he's rolling. Game high, 29 points, 17-point game. And then final seconds of the quarter, Jordan Poole pulls up from 39 feet out, and yes, in as time expires. The Chase Center goes nuts. Steph and company loving that. The crowd in it, and the Warriors from there pulled away to win the game 107-88 to tie the series up at one apiece. Now, Jason Tatum finished with a plus-minus 36 last night. Now, keep this in mind, folks. That is the worst mark of any game in his career, but it's also the worst of any player in a finals game in the two decades the metric has been recorded. Not good. And what's interesting is he had 28 points. So you look at those numbers, and it looks like, oh, man, he had a great game. I don't know what you're talking about. But that plus-minus cannot be ignored. Wendy, you were at the game. What happened to Tatum last night?
Well, he turned the ball over, I believe, 4 or 5 times, and that has been the hallmark of when the Celtics struggle. They gave up 33 points off of turnovers, just second most in a finals game in the last 25 years. And Tatum was on the court for a lot of those turnovers, which is why that plus minus is so poor. But as he prepares for game 3, he needs to prepare for dealing with Andrew Wiggins. In this game, really the first 2 games, the Warriors have resisted switching when he's got the ball. They really just want Wiggins on him. When he's had a smaller defender on him, he's frankly cooked them. If you go back and look at the threes he hit last night, he was 6 of 9 on threes. He had smaller defenders on him. The Warriors recognize they need to leave Wiggins on him, and he has not done a great job against Wiggins. So he's going to have to solve that a little bit. They're going to have to run some actions that can get him some more freedom, and he's going to take care of the ball better. But I absolutely think he's capable. He hasn't put his best foot forward yet, and I believe he will.
All right, he's a superstar. And sometimes I think because he's a superstar, CJ, we tend to grade him more harshly than we would grade other people. You played against him many times. What did you see in yesterday's game that gave you pause, made you concerned? From Tatum.
I was just concerned about the turnovers and him settling. He was settling more often than he probably should have throughout the game. He had some switches where he was, you know, being guarded by Jordan Poole or Steph Curry. Understand the double team's going to come. Sometimes you have to embrace the double team. JJ talked about it earlier, not having a plan, not understanding what he wants to accomplish, not manipulating defense, similar to the way CP manipulated our series, right? Sometimes you're driving the pass. I think he has to get more into that mentality early, see what happens when you get into the lane. But more oftentimes than not, you know, people thought he didn't play particularly well offensively, but he had 13 assists. I think he can get that balance of 30 points, 7 to 8 assists, and that's when they're going to win games, and the game flow will be easier for him.
Okay. Is there a benchmark you see with him? Is there something you see with Tatum that you need to see, JJ, for him to really be utilizing all his gifts to give the Celtics a fighting chance?
It comes down to decision making, and I talked about this a ton before the series starts, and it starts with the turnovers. It starts with having a plan. It starts with being able to recognize defensive coverages and get your teammates involved. I thought he was great. I thought his shot selection in game 1 was fine. Yeah. It was off shooting night. It was fine. But he got his teammates involved. Of any player in this series that has taken 5 or more shots, according to Second Spectrum, he's got the worst shot quality in this series. So, and it really, to me, you know, Wendy brought up the point he knocked down some threes over smaller defenders. There were multiple times where he had a smaller defender on him and he settled for what I thought was a tough contested long two. Or he got into the paint and tried the James Harden rip through. It didn't work. He threw up a really difficult shot. So it goes down to decision making off the dribble, the passing, the turnovers. The Celtics can't withstand these high turnover nights against the Warriors. The Warriors are too good off of these turnovers.
You've been saying it game after game. Yep. They cannot turn the ball over like this. And it sounds like for Tatum, it's an issue of growing as a superstar, making those better decisions. Now, the other thing, Wendy, that really stood out to me in this game was that Draymond, Jaylen Brown altercation. And when you look at that, that became sort of a center, a touch point of this game. What did you make of that situation as you were there at the game?
Well, the thing about it is that I think Jason Tatum's got to do some film study here. You got 2 of the most cerebral players I've ever covered sitting on the set with you. Jason Tatum has got to let Jaylen Brown go here.
Oh.
Let Jaylen Brown get the double technical. Do not pull him away. He's making an instinct to protect his teammate. You got to realize that, that Draymond has a tech. And the thing about the NBA, this isn't a published rule. Guys like Draymond Green, Luka Doncic, Rasheed Wallace back in his day, the threshold for them getting their first technical is very low. The referees almost come out halfway to a tech on those players. But the threshold for their second technical is very high, and it is extraordinarily high in a playoff setting. Nobody's more aware of it than guys who are used to playing a majority of their games with one technical sitting on the books. So when Draymond gets his first tech, which you know will happen again in this series, all hands on deck to bait him into the second tech. Play his game back at him.
CJ, you're smiling. You guys are both smiling on this one. Go ahead.
I mean, you're right, and I think that's where youth comes into play.
So he should have let him go. He should have let Jaylen Brown go.
You let Jaylen Brown get the technical, or Grant Williams comes into the game. And when you're having those altercations where they're pushing, you escalate a little bit more, understanding that you can get the technical. You're eliminating the heart and soul of the Warrior team. Obviously, Steph is the universe, but Draymond is the sun at times, right? He initiates the offense. He rebounds. He's the energy. He's the defender. He's the one that's all over the court kind of manipulating. You see the Warriors' offense without him when he was hurt this season. It was completely different. If Draymond gets ejected out of this game, Boston wins going away, and now they end up going back home up 2-0. But I think the moral of the story is Tatum didn't want Jaylen getting involved, but in this instance, if this was Dame and I would have said one of us has to take this technical if he gets in our face, because there's a chance that he gets thrown out and there's a chance that I just get a technical, so who cares?
So if it was you and Dame, you guys would have been like, hands off.
I wouldn't have broke it up until I thought it was getting to the point of no return. You let it go a little bit because the refs are quick to draw, right? It's quick to pull the whistle out, quick to go review because they're watching so much. They're trying to analyze the game, they're trying to analyze the shot quality. Did he get fouled? Did he not get fouled? Guys are manipulating, flopping. So when you have a chance, when I got my fourth foul against the Phoenix Suns, what'd they do? They start running plays for whoever I was guarding. Guys that may not even be a threat offensively because I'm in jeopardy of picking up my fifth foul. If I leave the game, it changes the course of the outcome.
I like that. JJ.
I just want to be clear, Wendy. I wasn't laughing at what you said. I was laughing at the continued replay of Draymond resting his legs on the back of Jaylen Brown's head. It's funny.
Play it again, guys.
No, play it again because he clearly can move his legs to the other side, and he decides to move his legs to the right and just rest them gently on the back of his head. No, I think Wendy nailed this. Wendy nailed this. Look, the guys he mentioned, Rasheed Wallace, Doncic, Draymond Green, they are demonstrative players. They, Rasheed, Draymond especially, they are instigators. They're on the verge of a tech almost every game, and they know that once that first tech happens, they basically got to punch a guy to get out of the game. I mean, seriously, Draymond is able to toe that line of controversy time and time again, and he's basically daring and challenging the refs to throw him out of the game.
But I want to tell you, Celtics fans are hearing this right now, and they are literally pulling out their hair, saying, how is this fair? How is it fair?
Life isn't fair, Ryan. Life is not fair.
No. I can't believe I'm defending Celtics fans, first of all. But anyway, CJ, I look at this, and I wonder if this makes if this ends up being a difference maker in this series. Because Draymond, he can toe this line better than anyone. The Celtics don't have someone like that. They got a lot of great defenders, a lot of size, got a lot of defensive skill, but nobody who can agitate like that and push that button. How important is it in this series?
I think it's important, but I think that's the Warrior DNA. That's Draymond's DNA. The Celtics went a different way. Kendrick Perkins says it all the time. A bunch of junkyard dogs. Mm-hmm. They got some dogs over there. They've been able to win on the road. They've been able to win game sevens, back against the wall. They just kind of figure things out, led by Ime. They figure things out. Offensively, they're talented. Defensively, one of the better defensive teams we've seen. Switchability, can guard 1 through 5. Al Horford comes in the game, can guard 1 through 5. I think the biggest thing for the Celtics is that third quarter. If they even figure out that third quarter and be down 15 instead of 34, That's the difference.
I
just want to add something just in general about this series and specifically as it relates to the Celtics. We've seen throughout these playoffs their ability to bounce back after these games. We go back to the Milwaukee series. They lose game 3 by 23. They tie it up in game four. They lose game five. They win game six and seven. Miami series, they lose game five. They win game six and seven. So the idea that the Warriors have somehow figured them out or they have all this momentum, I'm just not buying that theory at all. The Celtics throughout these playoffs have made the necessary adjustments game to game. They've had bounce back games from Tatum. They've had bounce back games from Brown and Smart. Like, they are going to figure it out and be in a position to win games in this series.
Okay, Wendy, let me give you the final word. I think we have a second here. Wendy, I'll give you the final word.
Well, here's what I would say after watching the Celtics and Warriors. I'm going to make a prediction. I never, ever make predictions as I can get away with it.
Yes!
The Warriors are 5-0 after playoff losses this year. The Celtics are 6-0. My prediction is this thing is going 7, and it's going to come right down to the wire on a couple of these games, and whoever can execute in the clutch is going to matter. We're not going to have these lopsided fourth quarters. Eventually, it's going to come down to a play or two either way, and it could start happening in game 3 on Wednesday.
Wow, it's going 7. So, Wendy, who's going to win in 7?
I didn't say that. I just said I was predicting it was going
to
Nice
try, Ryan. You tried to trap him. I like it. I like it.
It's too slick. It's too slick.
He's just not going to answer, huh?
Well, coming up Monday, Dan Orlovsky's here, and he has something to say about Dak Prescott that's going to upset a whole bunch of people. He's going to share what that is next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Want some more Monday, Dan? Of course you want some more Monday, Dan. Even Graziano's shaking his head yes. So Monday, Dan, jump on in here with a hot take, and let's start with Tua.
I think Tua is probably the most important Dolphin player since Dan Marino. We're talking about a quarterback who went fifth in the draft 3 years ago, and three things. One, they hired a head coach that they're hoping is their Sean McVay, right? Mike McDaniel from the San Francisco 49ers. Number two, the offensive line reinforcements. Teron Armstead at left tackle. There's also been a huge uptick in draft capital that they've invested. And then three, the support. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki. Three tailbacks that have been signed. I like it, Graziano. He's got a lot to prove. I have high, high expectations for Tua Tagovailoa in Miami. Now on to the guy that was drafted one selection after him, Justin Herbert. I truly believe it is AFC Championship game or bust for the Chargers and Justin Herbert. I think their roster is as good as anybody's in football. Their offensive line has the chance to go from really bad to really dominant. Their skill position group is top five in the league, and their defensive talent is absolutely off the charts. I know it's a loaded division and conference, but if this dude is a superstar like I think he is and many do, it's AFC title game. Quarterbacks you win because of. I know people think the list is big. That's because the depth at the position, talent-wise, is better than it's ever been. I think all of these guys on this list have proven, one, that they have carried their team in the past when they've had depleted roster, or two, that you watch their game and you see it unfold on the field and you say unquestionably, their talent is so good that when the roster is lessened at some point, we're going to win games because he's the guy behind the center.
All right. There's somebody missing from that list, though, Dan. I didn't see Dak Prescott on that list.
No.
Where was Dak Prescott on that list?
Listen, I think Dak Prescott's a good to really good player. I just don't believe that he has met those criteria. That at some point in his career, when the roster has been depleted, I even said last week that he didn't play as well ever since he lost DeMarco Murray. He never played with DeMarco Murray. But ever since, like, when Tyron Smith doesn't play, they're incapable of winning games, it feels like. Or he doesn't have Amari Cooper, and he struggles to perform. I think he's a good player. I just don't believe that he has shown, hey, our defense gave up 35 points three games in a row. Don't worry. Our offense will be good enough because I'm the quarterback. Really good, but this is a special list, and I think all these guys have proven that they've done that. He just hasn't yet.
All right, Teddy, I want you to jump in on this.
Well, winning games, how many games? I mean, and you're talking a lot of quarterbacks that, I mean, there are a lot of quarterbacks you win games because of. I think Dak's one of those guys where you can have a game, he can have a game where it's just he's thrown for 300 plus. He hasn't turned the ball over. It's in Dak. I don't know how consistently Dak can do that. Some of the quarterbacks on the list, you can lose games because of also. I mean, so I'd love to see a list on who you win championships because of. There's a handful of them on this list, absolutely. It's just that, you know, you're winning games because of quarterbacks, and you can do that with a lot of different quarterbacks. My question is, how many, Dan?
Well, I'd say, first of all, so you asked the question, it's got to be a stretch of games, Teddy, whether it's 3, 4, 5 games, something like that, right? I'm sure, yes, he's had a game where you go, man, he played so well that the Cowboys lose that game without him, but a stretch of games. That list, if you're going to say quarterbacks that you win championships because of, you're probably looking at, I think Josh Allen is that guy. I think Joe Burrow is that guy. I think Lamar Jackson is that guy. I think Patrick Mahomes is that guy. I think Justin Herbert is that guy. I think Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Stafford. So the two guys that I would say still you win a championship because of that haven't proven that to me at least would be Derek Carr and Russell Wilson. Those would be the two guys that say, all right, I want to see if you can win a championship because you got those guys on your football team. We'll find out in Denver with Russell Wilson this year.
Dan Graziano's face is so going with all those, kinds of contortions.
There's a lot to unpack here, right? I mean, like, look, because this is a conversation you have with people, and this is a concept that gets articulated when you talk to people in front offices. There's a handful of quarterbacks you win games because of, and there's another group that you can win games with. Right. I think Orlovsky's list is too long because, as I understand the criterion, right, it's everything falls apart, but you can win anyway because you have Aaron Rodgers, because you have Tom Brady. I don't think there are 10 guys that show that.
And, so who
and
are you frankly, taking off?
I mean, look, I know you're going to hate this because it's your buddy.
You're going
to say
Stafford.
Like, Stafford played 12 years in Detroit and didn't do any winning. Like, he goes to L.A. where they're loaded and they win. Like, he's the example of the guy that doesn't fit this criterion.
No, because you can't win games. Go ahead, Teddy.
I'd leave Stafford on there, actually. So this question a couple years ago may be different. But for what I saw, especially how they finished the Super Bowl when Stafford just said, you know who I'm going to? I'm just going to hit him. There's Cooper Kupp, and they still couldn't stop it because the way he had his arm talent, his accuracy. I'd keep Stafford on there. Lamar Jackson, championships because of Derek Carr. Now we're talking about quarterbacks. You have to anticipate. You can see it. Right. I just think for Jackson to win a championship, there are huge pieces, special teams-wise and defensive-wise and running game-wise, that have to complement what he does. So that's my feelings on Lamar.
Well, guys, I got to leave it there. This is such a great discussion. Maybe we got to have this discussion tomorrow,
we might have
too.
Again.
Because I'll tell you what, this is incredible.
Graziano, you're lucky, dude.
You can get him tomorrow, Dan. Don't worry.
Come show up.
All right, thanks, guys. Let's take you back to the NBA, and let's spin this series forward. We're tied at one game apiece. Game 3 in Boston Wednesday night. Our friends at Caesars Sportsbook, by the way, have the Celtics tabbed as the favorite to win the series. But check it out. It's only by a small margin. I mean, this series is close. And look at it right there. See, this is by no means even close to being over. And I want to bring our NBA guys back, Brian Windhorst. Let me ask you, do you think the Celtics should be happy with a split heading into Boston?
I mean, I would say being around them last night, they were satisfied. They wanted to come out 1-1. They came out 1-1. My thing is that they have more problems after game 2 than they, I think, anticipated. And so, again, I will specifically underline that third quarter. And the thing about it is the Warriors have done it different ways. It would be one thing if Steph just had a quarter like he had in the first quarter of game 1, where he just got red hot and it's one of the greatest all-time shooters. They've got structural issues with the way they've handled the third quarter of these games. And this has been a recurring problem for them all season long. If this was just a Warriors thing, I would say okay. And I'm not typically a guy who pays a lot of attention to how teams play in individual quarters, but this to me is the defining moments of this series. They cannot allow themselves to get worked over in a series that I expect to be very, very close. They cannot allow themselves to get worked over like this. All of their focus, or a lot of their focus over the next 48 hours, has got to be how they better prepare themselves for the way the Warriors attack them in those third quarters.
So, JJ, who has the edge in this series?
I still think the Celtics have the edge. You know, the adjustments I'm looking for going forward from the Celtics is how are you guarding Steph Curry in pick and roll? And based upon that, maybe there's a change in rotation. Maybe Daniel Tice doesn't play. Maybe Al Horford plays more at the five. You try to play a little smaller. Wendy, I know that Ryan couldn't trap you to make a pick on this, but I did have a question just because we were talking with the Caesars Sportsbook. Who did you put your money on to win the series?
I didn't put my money on anybody. I know enough not to bet on
see,
this kind of series.
I thought it was going to work when the question is asked by the ninth best free throw shooter in NBA history, but maybe not.
Still unwilling to give us your pick. All right.
So those are the adjustments as you see them. What do you think, CJ?
I like what JJ said. Obviously, the third quarter is important, but based on how the Warriors have performed historically, I don't see them winning third quarters. You just have to keep them close. Understand that the bench minutes are going to be important. Steph sits the start of fourth quarters. Steve may tinker with the rotations a little bit, but historically he's been stubborn and wanting Steph to get his rest. I think for the Boston Celtics, Smart has to play better. Horford has to play better. There's no questions, no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Jason will be better. Jaylen Brown will be better. He'll be more like the start of the game where he hits three threes to start. He's aggressive attacking the basket. They understand that the series started once they won in the Bay.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose at home, then I think they should be worried.
Oh, yeah. All right. Great job on the NBA today, guys. Great, great job. Can't wait to hear your takes as we get ready to go into Game 3. And by the way, Game 3, NBA Finals, Wednesday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on ABC, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Radio. With the series moving to Boston, tied up 1-1. Coverage tips with NBA Countdown at 8:30. First Take coming up next. Is too much being asked of Steph Curry? Plus, did Draymond deserve that second technical foul in the second quarter last night? First Take, Molly, Stephen A., JJ, and CJ coming up.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Only four teams remain at the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. We're going to have the number one seed Oklahoma taking on number five UCLA, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Today on ESPN in the app, if UCLA wins, they play an elimination game right after. Oklahoma wins, they get to the championship series, which starts on Wednesday. Meanwhile on planet Earth, okay, let's check this out. This is the Cooper's Hill Cheese Race in Gloucester, England. Annual spring event's been going on almost two centuries. That cheese rolls up towards of 70 miles an hour. It was a pagan ritual. It was supposed to cut down on grazing rights. You actually catch somebody at the bottom of the hill. Folks, this actually happens. First Take starts now.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.